What, if anything, can fiction tell us about mental health?
Now you say you're lonely. You cry the long night through. Well, you can cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you.
Ella Fitzgerald singing the blues, a kind of sadness which I guess can make life richer. But what happens when the story of sadness becomes destructive, when the blues really are about depression or other forms of mental illness? As part of Mental As Week at the ABC, I thought we might investigate what fiction might reveal about mental illness with three writers who've taken on this subject. Melina Marchetta is a much-awarded author of young adult fiction, and it's nice to have you back on the show, Melina.
Thank you, Michael.
Sarah Jones is a Melbourne writer. Her latest book is called Isabel of the Moon and the Stars. Good morning.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here, Sarah. That ties in well with our Mars theme later on.
Well, look, I'm very versatile. Happy to chat about that too.
I love synergies. There are synergies all over the place with this show. And Elizabeth Hanscom is a psychologist, and she's also a writer of narrative nonfiction. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome. Thank you.
Now, Melina, let's start with you. Your most recent books, I know, are set in the sort of fantasy realm, and I gather you're working on a thriller at the moment. But the work that you've written that is really relevant to today's conversation is your book Saving Francesca, which came out, I realise, with some shock and horror in 2003, such a long time ago now. Can you briefly remind us about that wonderful story that you told?
It's mostly about a young girl who's navigating going to a new school, and it's a boys' school that's opened its doors to girls for the first time. But the two major aspects of that move is that her friends from her past school have gone to another school, and her mother, who is as passionate about telling Francesca who she is as her friends are, doesn't get out of bed one morning because she's suffering depression. So it's about being in this very foreign world with none of your backup, I suppose, that you're used to.
And what was it that made you want to write about depression? Because it's such a strong theme through the book. As you say, this girl has got her school life, but then she's got this whole ordeal she has to deal with at home.
Well, I didn't really want to write about it. It wasn't an intention, I suppose. My major thing was someone in having to be forced to be in a different world. And the one thing that I did know at the time was that I didn't want her recovering, the family recovering from a death in the family, as, you know, I didn't want her mother having died, because that would have actually consumed the novel. So I went for a mother not getting out of bed, and I suppose it was an experience that I had gone through, so not at 17, but at a younger age. So it was an area that I kind of knew well. But it was never supposed to dominate the story. Mm. There had to be a balance, and that's kind of where it began.
Melina, in your own story, are you the one who can't get out of bed, or are you dealing with a parent who was going through that?
I probably wasn't dealing with it because I was so young, but it was a parent not getting out of bed, and one very similar to Francesca's mum, very dynamic, very passionate, very defined the family, and you know, one of the things that I did want to explore in this novel, or dispel, I suppose, is that idea that weak people suffer depression. It's actually the strong. It's the people that are sometimes holding everyone together, and what it leaves a family with, especially in the case of Saving Francesca, is that they start questioning who they are without that person around.
Was it also a way of rethinking what you might have done as a child?
You know, I didn't put too much thought into it, and it didn't occur to me that it was a slight issue. And my mother tends to read my manuscripts, like she specifically wants to read them. And I remember when she finished reading it, she said that she didn't mind that I wrote about it at all. I mean, it wasn't an issue. It was what really upset, what worried her was that it had been in my head for decades, you know. So in her head, she was wondering, had this defined me? Had it ruined, you know, my security as a child? And, you know, writers are really cruel. I mean, I kind of used it as a device, and it then became something much more personal. I think once it was released And all of a sudden I was not dealing with, but, you know, experiencing this wonderful feedback from kids in the same situation or women in the same situation. I just thought, wow, this is bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah, the cruelty of writers is a theme that comes up quite a lot, actually. The
ruthlessness. Yeah, we don't care about
them. No, you're watching a story unfolding, someone sharing their heartfelt story with you, thinking, gee, this is good material.
It's like when they say that actors, when they're crying, you know, in real life, they'll go to a mirror to see what they look like so they can use it.
I know, that is the hard side. So, Sarah, let's talk about your novel. Tell us about the main character in your novel. She's called Isabel. What's she struggling with?
So, yes, Isabel is my major character. And she suffers from a form of depression and anxiety that means she's relatively high functioning for long periods of time. But then she experiences this terrible crash, which makes it very difficult for her to function. And even in those long periods without this visitation, and she does think of it very much as a kind of a spectral, otherworldly visitation, the constant anticipation of it recurring dominates even her healthy periods.
And how old is she?
She's in her early 30s.
Right. Okay. And what's her relationship situation?
Troubled. Right. Complicated. So part of the backstory is that she has previously been engaged to the character Carl, and this has ended quite badly.
He's shot through, hasn't he?
He has indeed, and part of his motivation for leaving was his frustration with her illness. So she's comprehensively single, but has a very warm relationship with her best friend, Evan.
Yeah. Is Evan ever potentially a love interest?
Evan would like to be, but he has his own peculiarity. He had a very early religious experience and basically consecrated his chastity until marriage.
Yes, that was a rash move. All right.
But so, it was a useful device, I think, in terms of the novel, because you don't have to go there to that romantic place. It's off the table.
I can see that. Yes, that eliminates that complication. So why? I mean, you know, we're talking about mental health. Why did you decide to go into this territory?
Two reasons. One personal, a little bit like Melina, I had personal experiences, struggled with my own mental health periodically. But secondly, I had this intense frustration with the way mental illness can be portrayed in popular media and culture, especially this idea that people who are seriously unwell, their problems are suddenly solved by love. Throw romantic love into the mix and everything's dandy.
So you think that's a trope that occurs in fiction particularly?
I do, yes.
Right. And what's wrong with that idea? Because it sounds right. I mean, if you think about depression, which is such a experience of solitariness, as though you're alone with this condition and the rest of the world can't get inside your head. There's a world out there that's functioning according to the old rules, and suddenly here are you living by these new and very private rules. The idea that love could reach into that space and save you from that sounds, plausible.
You're right, and I certainly wouldn't for a second argue that romantic love and mental illness are incompatible. But what I strongly object to is this idea that romantic love solves the problem, that suddenly this deep affliction melts away or becomes a different kind of entity that's somehow more manageable. I don't believe that's the case.
So where is the answer? Where is the way through, do you think?
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to explore in this novel, is looking at someone for whom every day, to some degree, is an act of heroism. You know, who gets up in the morning, who maintains friendships, who maintains a job. Okay, it's not a particularly glamorous world, but when you're fighting this visitation, it becomes valorous, it becomes heroic, I think.
Yeah. And did you feel the need to write this book because you were dissatisfied with other fictional tellings? I mean, you've talked about love, but more generally, are you trying to write some kind of misapprehension or some mistelling that you think is out there?
What I think is interesting when you look at novels that successfully tackle the topic of mental illness, they typically have an onset story. So there will be some triggering event, what novelists call the inciting incident, from which grows conflict, from which you get a climax, from which you get a denouement. You know, that's how fiction works. It's propelled by change. But what I was interested in is this experience that is characterised by wearying sameness. Just that feeling of, oh, God, I'm here again and I'll get out of this, but I'll be here again.
Yeah.
And that repetition, I think, is at odds in some ways with fiction. It is opposed to how fiction moves itself. And that really interested me.
Yeah. This is Books and Arts on RN, and we're looking at mental health as a subject for fiction writers. And I'll turn now to you, Elizabeth Hanscom, because you're a psychologist and a writer. What's your take on this? Because I suppose it seems to me that psychology is a science. And if I wanted to know about psychology, perhaps I would ask scientists who had done research rather than fiction writers who were basing it on their own experience or their own impressions. Do you think that fiction does have insights to offer?
I think fiction has enormous insights into so-called mental health. I don't think of psychology as a science as much as a lot of people think of it as a science. It's also got its artistic element, and
right.
I think the artistry lies in the stories themselves, because fiction has access to the subjective experience of what it's like to be troubled. And there's this whole problem, I think, with the way we think of mental health as a sort of us versus them notion, you know, the mentally unwell, the mentally ill, and then there's
there,
the rest of us.
Yes.
And it's such a falsehood. Because
so fiction gives the opportunity for a kind of empathy, does it? A kind of insight into what it's like to go into those dark places.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Going to those dark places and being able to explore them in a way that... it allows empathy, it allows resonance, and it also allows people to sort of recognise that it could be me too. It's not just them out there. I mean, I was saying this before, I always think of it as about states of mind, and states of mind are quite fluid. You know, you go from, and sometimes they're more troubled and sometimes they're less troubled. One of the things about Sarah's book that struck me was the way she could go in and out of it. And the same with Melina's story, that the child, the young woman, can go in and out of her distress. It's not there all the time. I mean, it can be there all the time, but it moves around, and I think that can get lost sometimes.
Melina Marchetta, does this make sense to you? Is this resonating for you?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, what Elizabeth was just saying about the empathy, and it could be me too. Once again, like I always think with this novel, there was the time I was writing it and then the time when it came out, and it was the response when it came out that pretty much overwhelmed me. You know, you did have... young people and older people, actually, you know, across the range, saying that was me, that was my mum. If I had this book when I was a teenager, I would have given it to my friends and said, "See that? That's what I'm going through at home." So I think that sometimes, you know, the wonder of fiction is that someone out there is thinking, "Wow, there's someone else out there that is experiencing exactly the same thing as I am, and they've come through to the other side."
Right.
You know, it's as simple as that sometimes. So.
So people really did feel that at least they had understanding, did they? Or did they go further and say, "It helped me get through my problem"?
I think one of the most profound letters I received was from a young girl who had suffered depression for a really long time. And she said in this letter, "The black hole hasn't gone away, it just got a bit smaller." And I just thought, wow.
That's a good line, isn't it?
Bawling my eyes out when I was reading that, you know. And
so
even when I was, you know, I'd be signing, you know, it was the novel that came up, you know, out 11 years after my first novel. So there was a lot of attention. I remember the big signing days and, you know, young girls leaning across the table as I was signing and saying, "I'm Francesca and that's my mum." And, oh, God, it was just so...
Yeah.
It was almost like they had been dying all their life to say that. And I just think, wow, that was... That's when you think there is a responsibility, but you try not to write with that responsibility because you could get it all wrong.
Now, one of the... factors in mental illness that I don't think I've seen much treated in fiction, but perhaps I just haven't been reading the right books, is medication. I mean, perhaps I'll throw this to you, Melina. When you wrote Saving Francesca, well, it came out in 2003, Prozac had been on the market for 20 years. In fact, generic versions of it had become available just 2 years earlier. Did you ever consider making medication part of the story?
No, and medication has probably been the part of the story that I've got in trouble the most about in reviews and even to my face. I remember someone saying to my face, you know, in person, That they loved the book, but they felt that I was very irresponsible for not pushing antidepressants. And I've read reviews where people say how irresponsible I was for not doing that. And I don't agree with that, of course, at all, because there are discussions in the novel about antidepressants, and there are arguments between family members. And anyone who has been in this situation knows how passionately for and against family members can be about antidepressants. So I'm not for or against them, but I just think it is not my place to prescribe them through my writing.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, look, I think there's a problem with over-prescribing medication, that medication is seen as the solution to the problem, when I think the problem is actually one that needs a lot of hard work, particularly in the form of having the opportunity for people to talk about what's going on for them and having somebody to listen. I was thinking about what Sarah was saying about how romance doesn't necessarily solve the problem. And it doesn't, because when somebody is suffering with extreme grief or distress or depression, they're not easy to be with. They're not easy to be with. And
But on the other side, sorry to interrupt you, but on the other side, I mean, there are people who've suffered from incidents of, let's keep it on depression, who've found that medication has been a lifesaver, I've heard people say. Yeah. I mean, it's actually got them through.
It is a really good starting point, but I don't think it's the solution on its own. There's more that's needed, and I think one of the dangers is it's the sort of quick fix notion that we can sort of sort our problems out easily when we can't.
It's also hard to see how pills are going to work in a story, Sarah. I mean, would you work them into a narrative? Would you be interested in that?
Look, it was part of the Isabel story.
Oh, it is.
At one point in the novel, Isabel rattles off this catalogue of medication that she's taking. But I probably slightly disagree with you, Elizabeth, in the sense that I think for some people, and Isabel is one of them, her malady simply is. It exists. It doesn't have a reason. It doesn't have an onset story. It's just part of the package of who she is. And I very deliberately constructed the story to be that way. So I think for her, the medication is just part of the arsenal of dealing with a facet of being her. So she has quite a prosaic approach to it, really.
I mean, as we just draw this conclusion, this conversation to a conclusion, it would be good to just to think widely about books that we think have dealt with this well, or books that have dealt with it badly, actually. Melina, let's start with you. As you cast around across fiction, I mean, going back to, perhaps even to the Brontes, are there works that you think really have got into that world of psychology rather than social interaction of this kind you might find in, say, Jane Austen? I think of Jane Austen as, you know, writing about manners and social mores, whereas Bronte seems to get into your head. Have you got some thoughts on that, Melina?
No, I don't know. I suppose for me, it's just I'm pretty particular when I come across a book that's dealing with it, because I think, you know, I wonder if they're going to go right or wrong with it.
Yeah, so what ones have gone right, do you reckon?
Well, you know, I don't even know if this is a right or wrong, but I think of a book like Catcher in the Rye. I mean, he is a boy on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I mean, that kid is having a nervous breakdown, and that's what we're witnessing. So it's just amazing to see how that was dealt with. And, you know, I suppose if I'm going to look at the YA area, you know, there was a popular writer in the States, Sarah Dressen, I always forget whether it's Dressen or Dessen, but she wrote this book once, just this, you know, it looked like a light, fluffy book called Just Listen. And I just thought that that was one of the best, you know, contemporary novels that was light in one way, but it really went into an area that spoke about the background to this person's depression and what the family was doing. So I'm never really interested in a quick fix for it, or an analysis of it. It's just pretty much the way it's presented on the page that seems authentic to me as a reader.
Elizabeth, there's the mental health professional on the panel. Do you have a view? I mean, what about one that's gone very wrong?
I can't think of anything.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest often
comes
up.
I thought that's too stereotypical in a way. That creates, I know it was quite a while ago it was written, but it creates sort of really extreme images of some people with mental illness.
Yeah.
The one that came to my mind was Janet Frame's Towards Another Summer, which I think is a beautiful rendition of a disturbed mind and a writer writing it. And it's a novel, but it's got that autobiographical element where she imagines she's a migratory bird. bird as a way of escaping from her anxiety. It's just a beautiful story, right. And it works really well.
Okay, Sarah.
I think that Wally Lamb's She's Come Undone is a novel that handles the issue really sensitively and really convincingly. Mm. I have to say that for my own part, I gravitated towards poetry on this theme. And I'm by no means a poetry aficionado, but for me, I mean, works by Sylvia Plath and Wilfred Owen really get to the heart of the matter.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. I mean, would you read Sylvia Plath, though, if you were in anguish yourself?
Look,
I do.
You do, yes, you do. It helps. It helps because you know that there's another out there who's having a similar experience, and that's what's so important.
And someone who was able to compost that anguish into something beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it didn't help her. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, you know, she didn't make it.
I don't think writing fiction is necessarily therapeutic. It has a therapeutic dimension, but it isn't therapy per se. There's more work to be done.
Gosh, this is such a challenging and rich topic, isn't it? Thank you for starting this conversation to all three of you. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Melina Marchetta is a much-loved author of young adult fiction. The book we've been discussing is called Saving Francesca. It's published by Penguin. Elizabeth Hanscom is a psychologist and writer, and her works can be found in the Griffith Review and in Meanjin, among some places. And Sarah Jones's book is called Isabel and the Moon and Stars, and it's published by University of Western Australia Press. And I'd love to know what your favourite, well, let's say contemporary works of fiction that uncover the truths about mental states or have insights about the mental states, and especially when things go wrong. It'd be great if you could get in touch. You can tweet us, of course. You can comment on our Facebook page and you can comment on our website. And if you are concerned about your own mental health or the mental health of anyone among your friends or your family, Lifeline is always there. 13 11 14 is the Lifeline number. 13 11 14. And Beyond Blue, they're there as well. That's 1300 22 46 36. 1300 22 46 36.